Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. This week, the staff of East County Magazine is on vacation. We'll be back soon with lots of breaking news, but for today, we hope you'll enjoy some of our favorite top newsmaker interviews and features as we present Best of East County Magazine's radio show, Where East County Matters. Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. My guest today is Nancy Nunke, who is the executive director of the Hearts and Hands Animal Rescue. It's an education and therapy center, and they do some amazing things with some very special animals, including zebras. You heard it right. We have a zebra ranch right here in East County. Nancy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Miriam.
Now, I have to ask, how did you develop an interest in zebras, of all things? How did this get started?
Well, it happened many decades ago. I was a horse trainer, and I showed horses. And I had a wildlife park call me and ask me if I could train a zebra they had a problem with. And apparently this two-year-old little stallion was chewing at people through the chain-link fence and didn't make it too inviting for the people who came to see him. So I said, of course, and my heart was going pitter-patter, pitter-patter, and I had no idea whatsoever what I was getting myself into. But this wild little zebra ended up coming to my barn, and within about 10 seconds, I realized it was not a horse with stripes.
It was a horse of a different color, in a sense. How did you realize that? What happened?
He wasn't trained at all, and I had to send him into my barn, into an open stall, and the second that I shut the bottom door of the Dutch doors of his stall, he started coming out over the top door.
Uh-oh.
And so that was some pretty fast action we had to do. And just all of his behaviors just showed us that this was not even a typical, but a wild horse would do.
Wow.
So I had a lot of homework to do. So what I did was spent the next 60 days at a different wildlife park. And I went every morning and stayed till nighttime, and I observed their zebra group. And
interesting.
So that's how I learned enough just to get him to the point where I could take him back and put 90 days later to his wildlife park, and he'd no longer chewed on the fence. But it began a lifetime of my love and devotion to the zebras.
Now, you now have various types of zebras at your ranch. How many varieties do you have?
We have all three species, including the Grevy's, which is the largest of the zebras, and they have a large mule-like head and very large umbrella-type ears, and they have a very narrow striping pattern, and it's vertical on their body, and they're endangered. And then the second one, which is vulnerable here and endangered in a lot of countries, it's going to be considered endangered very shortly.
So you're actually helping to preserve the endangered species.
Yes, we are, yeah.
And you're USDA licensed and everything, right?
Absolutely, USDA and Fish and Game and so on. So the second one is the Hartman's Mountain Zebra. And in fact, we just had a baby born this year. He's just about 3 months old. Thank you. And it's been 4 years for us. So it's just wonderful that we were able to have this little baby born and able to share it with the public, you know. And so they're the second size. They're the kind of the middle size zebra. And then the other one is the Grant Zebra or the Plain Zebra. And they're what's considered the most common zebra. But every year, thousands and thousands are being depleted. So they're much less common. And it's not really a good word to use for them anymore.
Wow, that's really sad. But it's good that you're able to help work on saving the species, even if it's in captivity. Now, you've developed a reputation for some amazing training techniques that you do with these zebras. In fact, I understand you're known as the Zebra Whisperer.
I guess that's what they call me. Yes.
Yeah, you do something called friendship training.
Friendship training is something that the zebras taught me.
Tell us what that involves.
Friendship training is something that I developed over several decades with the zebras. Zebras cannot be force trained. And force training is something that is used with horses. Sometimes we decide ourselves, you know, what is force training and what isn't force training. And then we say, well, this is natural training, natural horsemanship. And there's a variety of people out there that are using natural horsemanship in how they define it. But really, it's the animal that decides whether it's force training or not. So horses are domesticated and they are much more submissive to our ways of training them. They don't fight very much. Mm-hmm. And so it's very difficult to know if we're forcing them to do something or if we're asking them to politely to do it, because most of the times they'll just do it. But with zebras, when you use typical horse training on them, they will say absolutely not, mm-hmm. and they'll fight.
And that can even be dangerous. I know you've told me zebras don't make good pets because of their temperament. Tell us about that.
That's very correct. Children should never be around zebras. And you know, occasionally we have a little baby or something, but mm-hmm. I mean a full-size zebra. Because of the way that they have to be trained, mm-hmm. and that's what friendship training is all about, which is we become the animal to train the animal. Mm-hmm. Hmm. And when you do that, a zebra will become your very best friend. And zebras, in the plain zebras, the grants, each has one best friend in their group. And if someone else in the group tries to interfere with that friendship, like walking between them, coming to eat with the two friends, they will get shunned, they will get kicked, they will get bitten. And until human beings understand that the zebra social protocol is friendship-based, then people can't train zebras. Mm-hmm. And yet, here with friendship training at Hearts and Hands Animal Rescue, we train zebra after zebra after zebra after zebra and have proven over many decades that friendship training, which is the way they train mm-hmm. each other, is the way to go.
Yeah, I've seen this in action at your ranch, and it's really amazing what you've accomplished with some of these animals. Now, zebras aren't the only animals at the ranch. Another unusual animal that you have there is the wild Mongolian horse, or Przewalski's horse, that was actually extinct, I understand, or down to just one stallion in the whole world left in the wild. Tell us about these.
Yes, these are just absolutely amazing horses. Until several years ago, I had never even seen one myself mm-hmm. In person. And then all of a sudden, we have 12 of them that we had to rescue.
Yeah, and we should add that what happened was when it was discovered there was only one left in the wild, a search was made to find some that were in captivity and to begin breeding them. And so how many are there left in the world today?
There are about 1,200 now in the world.
Wow.
Coming from just 9 breedable animals.
Amazing.
That were found in a zoo. So, you know, people can talk about zoos and say there shouldn't be any, but if there weren't, there would be so many species of endangered animals that would now be extinct.
Sure.
And we would never have the opportunity to see them again or to breed them and mm-hmm. then put them back in the wild, as we've now done with the pea horses.
That's wonderful.
There are 3 groups
yeah,
back in the wild now.
That's wonderful. And what have you found these horses to be like when you worked with the Przewalski's horses? What are they like? What are some of the challenges you face there?
Well, just like the zebra, and in fact even more so, they will not be force trained. And that is why no one has ever been able to train them. Even Genghis Khan and his henchmen could never train these Przewalski's horses.
So the Mongol hordes could not bring this Mongolian wild horse to be tamed.
That's right. So when we had one little one come on her own to us, an orphan, I thought that would be a great opportunity since I couldn't introduce her as so young into one of the other groups. Mm-hmm. I said, well, let's try some friendship training with her and see. Maybe this could work.
And it did.
Well, she took to it just immediately. She's now 3 years old, and she's even inviting us to get on her back.
My goodness.
And this is something that no one has ever seen with these horses, and people have tried for yeah. centuries to train them. Even in our modern day societies where they're in zoos, they bring in the top horse trainers and have tried to train these horses mm-hmm. and no one's been successful. And here at Hearts and Hands Animal Rescue with friendship training, it just was so normal for her to be trained this way. And there was absolutely just no issues with it. And to me, she's just like another horse. But when you approach her in a different manner, the way people approach horses, all of a sudden she becomes a pea horse again.
Now, another very special horse you have there is called the Caspian horse. And this one, it's a small breed of horse, but very strong, I understand. And it was thought to be gone from the face of this earth. And then how was it rediscovered?
Well, it's very interesting. They were thought to be gone for 1,300 years.
My goodness.
And this is the horse that when you are over in Persia, in the Persian countries, mm-hmm. you will see in the architecture, you'll see soldiers in their ancient warrior garb riding these teeny horses, and the feet of the men are right down to the ankles of the horses.
Wow.
And when I saw those, I thought those were just caricatures of, you know, of the real thing. And
but
in fact, that's exactly what it is. These horses are 11 to 13 hands tall. And so good difference of, you know, 8 inches difference in the lower to the higher height range. But what makes them so fascinating is that a full grown, you know, an adult about 150 pounds can ride these horses. And there is a physical reason for that with the horse. And that is that their scapula, their shoulder bone is actually the same width as it is on a 15-hand quarter horse.
Wow, that's amazing. And the story behind this, I understand, is there was an American woman that was visiting over there in what used to be known as Persia, now Iran, and she saw a peddler with a horse pulling a cart, this small horse pulling this huge, heavy cart, and asked, where did it come from? And tell us what the answer was.
Yes, and he said he had gone up into the mountains when he needed a horse, and would get a horse out of the mountains. There were wild horses up there.
Yeah, and in this war-torn region, where obviously there's threats to them from more than the usual problems.
Correct.
So this woman then managed to get a few out of the country and started a captive breeding program in addition to whatever's left in the wild there.
That's correct. She sent some to Australia, to England, and to the United States. I think we got 24 here. Well, there's about 900 in the world now, and we have we have registration associations for them. People just don't know this horse, and yet this horse trains up. So in 30 days, you can train a horse well enough for a child to ride it.
So this is not a wild thing like the Przewalskis or the zebras. This is something that actually is accustomed to domestication because, as you've noted, the soldiers used them for riding purposes 1,300 years or more ago.
Yes, this is one of the most ancient breeds of horse in the world. And the oldest breed of horse in the world with a single toe is actually the Przewalski's horse.
My goodness, isn't that amazing? An interesting bit of trivia, by the way, about back to the zebras for a moment, is that they actually used to be found in San Diego County, I understand. There were giant zebras that roamed the Anza-Borrego Desert at one time.
I don't know how giant they were, but there is a skull of a zebra that was found in the desert, and they have it in the museum down there.
There were once zebras roaming the Anza-Borrego Desert. Another thing that you do, now you do a lot of not just rescue. Most of the animals you take in now actually are rescues that come from other places where maybe they were abused, an owner died. You've taken in everything from Zorses to zonkies that are mixes of zebras and horses, zebras and donkeys, zebras where the owner can't care for them anymore. But you also use a lot of these animals for education and therapy, working with people who've maybe been in accidents, been injured themselves. Tell us about a couple of the animals that you've used for that are so inspiring to people.
Well, our program is very unique, our therapy program. We like to call it our wellness program. So we have people come in for various situations with PTSD. We have burn survivors. We have, again, people who have been in debilitating accidents. We have people who are suffering from grief, which can be very debilitating.
Yeah.
And grief can come in various fashions, whether it's from having a loved one die or losing a job, moving, changing schools. You know, there's so many reasons why people actually will grieve. But we use our animals that have very similar stories to what the person coming in would have. So, for example, we have a little horse named Chansey who came to us over 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And Chansey had been attacked by a pack of dogs, and his neck had been broken.
Mm.
His shoulders had been displaced by 6 inches.
Wow.
And his upper muzzle had been removed completely. Unfortunately, it had eaten by one of the dogs, so it was never able to be recovered.
But you've done
and
amazing,
replaced.
Amazing things, though, to
yes.
help the tissue and regrow over the
the teeth and everything in the mouth.
So he's been in recovery with us for 3 years. His neck is completely better. His shoulders are back in place, and we're talking about 6 hours minimum every single day for over a year.
Yeah, you're a no-kill facility. It was very impressive when I visited to see you have animals that were, you know, the advice had been to put them down and never walk again. And you have many where you've been able to actually help them be able to walk again when they were thought to be paralyzed.
Yes, yeah. And it's just a matter of being determined. You know, we don't make those decisions for the animals. If they want to eat and they want to drink, that means they want to live. Mm-hmm. And so we just do whatever it takes. And we have so many wonderful therapists that come and help us and volunteer and share their time with the animals so that they can recover. And it, just like people, like, there's no magic number of days, weeks, months, or even years in recovery. We have a zebra. His name is Zinti. He has his own Facebook page, Zinti the
Zinti
Zebra.
Z-I-N-T-Y.
Z-I-N-T-Y. And Zinti is our comedian. He's a resident comedian. And he broke his pelvis 7 years ago. And he has one leg shorter than the other. He gets around the ranch. He's our mascot. He runs all over the ranch. Well, he does his special little hitching his giddy up gate all over the ranch.
Wow.
But he wants to be here, and his sense of humor is the most amazing thing, you know. So a lot of people think that because an animal has an injury that it just should be put down, you know. And that's just another way, they call it a polite way of saying kill. Yeah. But that's not something we do at the ranch. And so these animals, for the rest of their lives, give back to humans. And the sharing and the relationships are the most amazing things that you see develop between our wellness people and these animals.
Obviously, it's very expensive to care for this many animals. One of the things that you do to raise funds, although you're not breeding and selling these exotic species, but you do breed miniature spotted donkeys, beautiful animals, and Bengal cats, I understand.
Yes, those are my personal animals, and I breed them to help support the rescue. 100% of the money goes to the rescue.
Well, there you go.
So those are animals that you would rarely, if ever, see in a rescue. Mm-hmm. So the people that are looking for those animals are looking specifically one of those and not to a rescue for them.
So. Right. Now, you also have something very unusual. I understand that you just within the last couple of weeks got into the Guinness Book of World Records recently. Tell us about that.
Well, we're not quite there yet. We're just waiting for our approval.
Okay.
But we did do our Guinness Book of World Records attempt for the world record for the smallest bull, B-U-L-L.
And how small is he?
He's 28 3/16 inches tall.
Oh my goodness, I think I have a cat that's almost that big.
Yes, he's very, very tiny. And something really exciting is that we also, in the same group of little cows that came into us, that we also have a little girl whose name is Bluebell.
Wow. And we these are rescue animals, to be clear. Yeah.
Yes, they were actually very thin, and they were mangy. Someone purchased them who knew us. They were at a sale, and they brought them to us. And so, of course, they're very healthy now and
what kind of
chubby.
What species of bull is this?
It's called a miniature zebu.
Zebu.
Yeah, zebu. And these are one of the most ancient breeds of cattle, and they're naturally very tiny, and they're from India and Sri Lanka.
Fascinating. Do you only handle exotic animals, Nancy, or do you ever take in domestics?
We actually have about one-third is exotics, and then two-thirds is our local domestic animals, including dogs, cats, you know, chickens, goats, birds, and a lot of horses.
Wonderful.
And so anybody who's looking to adopt a horse, a full-size horse, or even a miniature horse, please give us a call because we might have the animal for you.
Well, very good. That's wonderful to know. Now, you've withstood, like so many in East County, the tragedy of the 2007 wildfire. I understand that it destroyed the entire ranch.
Yes, we were very fortunate that we had an early warning of the fire. We could see it right from the ranch when it first started. And we also saw that the wind was, we did the old finger test, it was coming our way. So
this was in Ramona, the Witch Creek fire,
which came
through there so fast.
Yes.
It was really almost no
warning. So we had about, we had six horse trailers in 6 hours. And all we could do was just keep taking the animals off the ranch.
And you managed to save all of them?
And we managed to save all of the larger animals.
Wonderful.
And just a few of the birds that were set free. There was no time to, you know, be able to catch them. Ended up going back into their pens. So it was a very, very sad time for us, as well as a time of elation that we were able to get almost everything off of
the
ranch.
But all the large and all these endangered animals.
So, yes, we got everything off. So it was wonderful. But it devastated the entire ranch.
And you lost your home.
We lost the residents. We lost everything there. All of the equipment, all the feed carts, the truck, one of the vehicles.
What kind of insurance? Did you have adequate insurance for that?
Unfortunately, we were underinsured intentionally by our insurance company.
Many
people were at that time. And so a little bit of insurance that we did get, instead of building the residence with it, we had to bring all the animals back because they were in temporary places.
Yeah, so you chose to take care of the animals at your own expense instead of rebuilding your own home up there.
Yes, that's what happened.
Are you still hoping to rebuild someday?
The house has, it's got framing around it, and it's been sitting there, and we're hoping to get it finished.
Yeah. Wow. Do you need volunteers at the ranch? Can people come and help in that way?
We do need volunteers. We're always grateful when people would like to spend a day a week or more volunteering their time to help out. There's so much to do still after the fire. There's still so much to do in getting the ranch back to the way it was prior to that. And we really need volunteers to help us with fundraising events.
So you just had a music festival, I understand. And what else is coming up?
Yeah, we had a music festival. We also did the Amazing Pet Expo. And we have the Night of the Horse coming up, where on April 19th, where we have been asked to partake in the greatest horse show on earth.
Where and when will that be?
And that'll be at Del Mar. There'll be a lot of great acts that come in, and this is our first year to participate, and we're actually
going to
be doing the rare and endangered animals. So we will have the availability of people to come in and see Azores, Azonki, a couple of zebras, and Kaya the Przewalski's horse.
Now, you're nonprofit, so I assume that you accept donations, is that correct, if people are able to do that or wish to?
Yes, we're 501c3 nonprofit, so that works for everybody's taxes, and so we definitely will accept all the donations that come in and put it to good use to feed and house and care for all the animals.
Beautiful. And again, I'm talking with Nancy Nunke with the Hearts and Hands Animal Rescue in Ramona. What is your website for people who wish to get more information or find out how they can help and get involved?
Our website is hhar.org.
hhar.org. Well, very good. And are there opportunities if people want to visit the ranch? Do you ever have times where it's open to the public or where you do tours or anything like that, Nancy?
Yes, people can call us, actually, and then we set up for tours. We do have three different ways that we tour, the hour-and-a-half tour, which is the shorter one, and then the two-hour tour, and then we actually have a three-hour tour, and in that one, we actually show people how we work with friendship training with the animals.
It's very wonderful. I've been on one of these tours, I know, and it was quite, a media tour, but it was quite amazing and just really a very uplifting and fascinating place to visit. So, Nancy, I want to thank you very much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County includes a butterfly festival, a Mother's Day event in a vineyard, Ramona Old West Days, and Wild in the Country.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including America on Main Street, Explore Mission Trails Day, Arts and Crafts Fair, and the Santee Street Fair and Craft Brew Festival.
So stay tuned for all of these events and more. Arriba! Casa de Pico Restaurant celebrates Cinco de Mayo on Saturday and Sunday, May 4th and 5th, with performances throughout the day at Ballet Forcloyo, Mariachis and Troubadours, as well as food and drink specials. For details, visit casadepico.com.
Oh, Lions, Tigers, and Bears in Alpine invites you to Wild in the Country, Passport to the Jungle on Saturday, May 9th from 3 until 7 p.m. The Exotic Animal Rescue Facility in Alpine will serve up dinner, live entertainment, live and silent auctions, plus prize drawings to benefit the nonprofit's efforts to make a real difference in the lives of more than 50 rescued animals that call the sanctuary home. For tickets and details, visit lionstigersandbears.org.
The Water Conservation Garden at Queen Mecca College in Rancho San Diego hosts its annual Butterfly Festival on Saturday, May 9th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Activities include tours of a butterfly pavilion and butterfly discovery lab, workshops, a pollinator party with Miss Smarty Pants, live music, food, crafts, and jewelry by local artisans. Children are encouraged to dress as a caterpillar or their favorite winged pollinator for the pollinator party at 11:30 a.m. For more information, visit thegarden.org/butterfly.
Ramona Western Days, a living history, encampments, and gunfighter skits competition will be held Saturday, May 9th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Sunday, May 10th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Ramona Rodeo Grounds. Hosted by Ramona Old West Days and Guns of the Round Table, the encampments will feature people representing the conditions people endured in the 1800s, including mountain men, pioneers, Civil War soldiers, and cowboys. New this year is a gunfighter skit competition on Saturday and Sunday, showcasing comedies, dramas, melodramas, history, and more. For details, contact RamonaOldWestDays at gmail.com.
Grant James Vineyard in Ramona will be celebrating Mother's Day on May 9th and 10th with flowers and chocolates for every mom. For more information, visit VineyardGrantJames.com. Now for a preview of coming attractions.
America on Main Street, a fun-filled family event, is being held this year on Saturday, May 16th in the downtown El Cajon area, beginning at 8 a.m. and lasting until 8 p.m. Admission is free, as are miniature pony rides, a kid-friendly petting zoo, large Ferris wheel, and varieties of games and crafts for the children. There will also be four different stages featuring live entertainment and music for your listening pleasure. For details, visit AmericaOnMainStreets.org.
Explore Mission Trails Day will be held Saturday, May 16th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Mission Trails Regional Park. This free event features free guided nature walks, talks, and programs throughout the park, including live animals and special kids programs from pony rides to a climbing wall, as well as a program in the amphitheater featuring coyotes. There will also be a bicycle demonstration and a program in the amphitheater. For details, see mtrp.org.
The Santee Street Fair and Craft Beer Festival, organized by Santee's Chamber of Commerce, will be held on Saturday, May 23rd from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. This large festival features local breweries from around San Diego County, live music and entertainment, a crafter row and artist alley, over 300 food and vendor booths, carnival rides, and games for the family in celebration of Memorial Day weekend. There will also be a tribute to veterans. Admission is free, though there is a fee for beer tasting. The location is at the junction of Riverview Parkway and Town Center Parkway. For details, visit SanteeStreetFair.com.
Julian hosts its Arts and Crafts Fair on Saturday, May 23rd from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., organized by the Julian Fireplugs. The event benefits the Julian Cuyamaca Fire Protection District and will be held at 2033 Main Street in Julian.
The California State Old Time Fiddlers Association District 7 presents the Julian Fiddle and Pickin' Contest on Saturday, May 30th at Julian's Town Hall in the historic gold mining town of Julian. Building on the decades-long history of the former Julian Banjo and Fiddle Contest, the Julian Fiddle and Pickin' Contest provides fiddlers, guitarists, mandolin players, and banjo players an opportunity to demonstrate their talents in a festive and friendly atmosphere. For details, visit sandiegofiddler.org. That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more in our calendar and in our festival and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar or would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
This is Helen Ofield from the Lemon Grove Historical Society, bringing you the sounds of history.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, guest hosting the Sounds of History, recording on the road today in Ramona. We are at the Guy B. Woodward Museum in Ramona, which is a marvelous place, and it is my great pleasure today to introduce our special guest, Ken Woodward, who is the curator of the museum. Ken, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm very glad to be here.
Now, I understand that your own family has long roots in Ramona. Tell us a little bit about your own family history first, and then we'll talk about the museum.
Yes, my family came out of Kellogg, Iowa. They came to Ramona in 1896, and the whole family, aunts, uncles, grandfather, grandmother, kids, girlfriends, the whole group. Two of them, they were actually farmers and dairymen out of Kellogg, Iowa.
And so what brought them to California, and how did they get here?
Well, they had lived in Iowa for many, many years, and they were just simply getting tired of the harsh winters and trying to take care of their farms and cattle. And so the whole family just packed up and came westward. That was my great-grandfather and all of his brothers and sisters.
Now, I understand that your family has quite the history here in Ramona. Can you give us a couple of highlights?
Yes. My family, they were farmers and dairymen, and later, my dad and his six brothers and sisters became very attached to Ramona. They grew up here. My dad's brother became a very famous historical archaeologist and historian. And my dad moved on in the 1930s and became chief of police in Oceanside, where he finished his years.
Now, let's hear about the museum.
The primary purpose of the museum was to commemorate the old-timers in Ramona, and they came here, they began coming here in about 1870.
Now, Ken, I understand that when your father was putting this whole marvelous museum together with all these different buildings, that he got some help from somebody who had a lot of experience in stage set design. Tell us about that.
Yes, he was very fortunate. Mr. Bill Cowan had moved to Ramona, and he had retired, and Bill Cowan was actually worked for Walt Disney Studios, and he built sets and built towns for Walt Disney Studios. So when my dad got ready to begin building some of the old barns and everything, he was very glad to help.
Yeah, this really does look like you've been plopped down and reincarnated in the middle of the Old West here with all these wonderful buildings. The centerpiece of it is the Theophile Verlaki House.
Yes.
And that was built, I understand, in 1886?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about the history of the house and how it came to be built.
Yes. Theophile Verlaki, he was a Basque from southern France. And at the time he left France in 1870 to come to the New World, to make his living. The whole Verlaki family came in to New Orleans, and then he found his way in 1870 to San Diego. And he became very prominent in San Diego. He built several businesses there, became one of the largest wine producers in San Diego.
Wow, so Ramona's wine industry has roots that go all the way back to the 1800s. Very interesting. And today it's certainly a thriving business up here. What can people see if they go into the Verlaki house today?
Well, I always tell people that they need to understand that everything they see here on this property has all been donated, mainly because the museum is a nonprofit organization. And when they go into that beautiful home, and it is all adobe, and they will find it beautifully furnished with all donated furniture, with all kinds of books in the library, with all kinds of furnishings in throughout.
And there's also a doctor's office. Tell us about that.
And there's a really interesting doctor's office. One of the bedrooms has been converted into a doctor's office. And that is, we have very old medical equipment that actually, you know, goes back to the 1800s that doctors have been donating to the museum. And it's really fascinating to see these old pieces of equipment.
There's also some very ornate furnishings. There's a fabulous antique grand piano in there, an old pump organ, a Victrola. And in one of the back bedrooms, I understand there's a bedroom set with an interesting history, too, very ornate.
Yes, the bedroom set is brought in to the museum in 1980, and this lady came in and said, I'd like to donate this beautiful bedroom set. It was built in 1840 back in Connecticut. But she said, you need to know who I am. She said, first of all, I'm part of the Yale family, the producers of the Yale Lock Company, and my great-great-grandfather in 1840 was the person who put together the Yale Lock Company.
Now, there's a lot more than just a vintage home on this property, however. You have amassed an amazing collection of some of the original buildings here in Ramona. Folks, if you come out here to the museum, the Guy B. Woodward Museum, you can see a vintage schoolhouse, a blacksmith shop, a barn, buggies, all kinds of interesting buildings, covered wagon, and also a jail. Now, I understand there's a really colorful history behind that jail. Tell us about it.
The jail was actually built in San Diego about 1890, and the jail was brought up here, 7 tons of iron, brought up to Ramona, and installed as the Ramona Jail. And then it, in the 1930s, it disappeared. And
so the jail was stolen?
No. The county of San Diego started using it for a dynamite storage, and it was found in a canyon and brought back to the museum.
Now, I understand that your mother used to have a job related to the jail.
Actually, that was my grandmother. And my grandmother, back in the early late 1800s, her job was to feed the prisoners, and she got 15 cents a day to bring them broth in.
And it has now been restored and brought back here to Ramona, and you can see it if you come out to visit the Guy B. Woodward Museum. Now, there's some other interesting buildings here. We're doing the interview actually sitting here in an old barn. What's the history of this?
Actually, it was one of my dad's ideas to bring in all of the old barns and all the old buildings that he could to the museum property. This barn was built in 1870. It was built by the Barnett family who came into Ramona from San Francisco area.
Looks like it's set up for meetings. Do you hold different kinds of meetings or events in here nowadays?
Yes. Every other month we have a potluck, and people are simply invited to bring something that they can share with everyone else. And we come in here and we have speakers on history and Ramona and things of this nature. It's really very good.
What fun. That's just an amazing resource to find. This place is a veritable treasure trove. As you walk through, you see antique dolls and vintage clothing and furnishings and tools. And there was a very interesting giant cook pot out there. Tell us about that.
The cook pot actually belonged to the Ortega family. And the Ortega family came to the valley in 1843. And they actually owned all 17,000 acres here in the valley.
So this was the family that received the land through the original Spanish land grant.
That's correct. And so the Ortegas proceeded to use the valley for farming all kinds of wheat and everything.
Now, of course, long before the original settlers came here, we had the Native Americans, the Kumeyaay people. I understand you have some Native American artifacts that people can see here as well.
Yes, the Kumeyaay Indians came to the valley 2,000 years ago, and we have some beautiful Indian artifacts, a whole display in the basement from that tribe.
Wow, I would love to take a look at that. And I understand, by the way, that the Kumeyaay now say they trace their history in the San Diego region back 10 to 12,000 years. Interesting, they recently found some artifacts in some other areas that suggest they may have been here even a lot longer than that. There are also a lot of interesting vehicles here. I see some vintage buggies, you know, like horse-drawn buggies, and what looks like a Conestoga wagon or covered wagon out there. What can you tell us about those?
Yes, the The one large wagon that we have, it seats about 12 people, and it used to take all the people that came into Lakeside into Julian. It took 12 hours for that wagon to take 12 people from Lakeside to Julian.
My goodness, how times have changed, and the kids think they have it rough now. Now, when your father was first getting started and putting this all together, there was another benefactor from San Diego who came along. He was the owner of San Diego Trust and Savings. Can you give us some details?
Yes, Mr. Thomas W. Sefton stopped by to see my dad one time and introduced himself, and my dad took him all the way through the museum and told him what he intended to do, and Mr. Sefton said, "Guy, tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to donate my mining equipment to the museum," which he did later on.
Yeah, and your father started this back in the 1980s or so, and then I understand that after he passed on and after Mr. Sefton passed on, the mantle kind of fell to you, and you came along and went downtown to retrieve all the mining equipment.
Yes, we were very fortunate because the Sefton family gave me a call one day, and they said, "Ken, I understand that our father promised to give you all of the mining equipment from the Colorado, California, Nevada gold mines." And I said, "Yes, he did." And they said, "Well, come down and get it."
What else did you find when you went down there?
First of all, they directed me to a warehouse next on Marina Boulevard, right next to the train tracks. And so I went down, knocked on the door, took a look, and the train tracks actually came into this large barn area, and Mr. Sefton's own personal railroad car was there.
What those very wealthy travelers used to use to go cross-country in the olden days. Now, he also donated some other interesting things. I see a tall ship replica down here. What else?
Well, in addition to the ship replica, it's difficult to believe, but he also donated the keys to Mount Vernon, George Washington's house. And that has always been a very interesting display.
Well, there you go. That's amazing. What else could people see that you would like people to know about the museum and the facilities here?
Well, the way the museum is put together, I think, is the most important, because all of a sudden the centerpiece is the Verlac House, built in 1886. You have a full-size basement, which is filled with beautiful artifacts. Then we have adorned on, my dad had brought in all of these buildings from the 1870s, and he reconstructed them here on the property. We're sitting in an old barn that was built in 1870.
It's amazing. It's really one of those little-known treasures we have out here in East County that I think a lot of people don't know about and would love to visit if they could. Now, speaking of visiting, when is the museum open to the public?
The museum is open to the public as advertised Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 1 to 4 o'clock. However, the museum is also open Monday through Thursday. We have one of our workers here, and they will open up the museum to anyone that desires to come in during the week.
Well, that's a good tip for our listeners here at East County Magazine. I know it's run by a nonprofit organization. If people have maybe old artifacts out there from the Ramona area in their basements or attics, who would they get in touch with if they have something they may wish to donate?
They would get in touch with our main office here on the grounds and describe what they would like to donate to see if we can use it and see if it fits in. And that has been done. You'll be surprised at the number of artifacts that we have here that are local to Ramona.
Wonderful. So if you want to visit the museum, you can visit their website at www.woodwardmuseum.org. Ken, I want to thank you so much for joining us, and I'm going to give you the last word here. Is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know about the Woodward Museum or the history of Ramona?
Well, I think it's really interesting. We have people from all over the world going through this museum. People coming in to visit California, they hear about the museum, they come up and they get a wonderful trip through the museum.
And it's located right on Main Street here in the heart of downtown Ramona today. Ken, I want to thank you very much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you very much, and it's been a delight talking to you.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Leon Thompson for East County Magazine reporting on the disappearance of bees. Researchers from Queen Mary University of London recently found that bumblebees that have been infected by parasites seek out flowers with nicotine in the nectar, likely to fight off the infection. The nicotine appears to slow the progression of disease in infected bees, but has harmful effects when consumed by healthy bees. Consumption leads to reduced appetite and shorter lifespans. Professor Geraldine Wright, lead scientist on the study at the University of Neuroscience at Newcastle University, wrote, "Even worse, we now have evidence that bees prefer to eat pesticide-contaminated food. Apparently, the nicotine in the neonicotinoid pesticide affects bees like cigarettes affect humans." Professor Wright goes on to say, "The fact that bees show a preference for food containing neonicotinoids is concerning. The findings suggest that even if alternative food sources are provided for bees in regions where neonicotinoids are used, the bees may still prefer to feed on the contaminated crops. Another concerning factor is that neonicotinoids can also contaminate wild plants growing near human-planted crops, meaning they are a larger part of bees' diets than was previously believed." The findings were published in a recent edition of the journal Nature, which concluded public concern over the impact of neonicotinoids on bees and other important pollinators has been on the rise. This month, the European Union introduced a temporary ban on the use of neonicotinoid pesticides on flowering crops until further scientific research has been conducted on the subject.
This is Janice Mork, host of People Power, profiling people and organizations making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is Janice Mork with East County Magazine and People Power, and I am here with Dr. Carole Ja Mira. She has been selected as one of 22 brilliant, beautiful, and brave Black women. Her profile is on display at the Women's Museum here in San Diego. Dr. Carole, what good works have you been doing for the community?
Recently, we went through a group called the San Diego Ambassador Program. I'm one of the elders, and we do a lot of things. They went to Washington and to New York 2012 and 2015. They went to go to Haiti in 2016, Water for Africa with Vicky Butcher. And so there was funds. And so with the program, what we did, they had a sleepover a Saturday, and they gave me a Youth Ambassador Volunteer Certificate.
And this was Saturday, March the 1st? Okay.
Also, I'm going to be going to Haiti 10 days from now. We're having a group of students from University of Dartmouth, Massachusetts, our School of Business. We're going to see how to enhance the program that we have of agriculture and safe water. And I've been going back and forth since 1999, and we lost a lot in 2010 with the earthquake.
And what else have you been doing in Haiti in the past since you started going back there?
I've helped them. We build their homes, sending them to school since 1999. We created the Angels for Haiti project, and a lot of people in San Diego support me for that. And that's in 2001, they wanted scholarships, school band, art, and music. So I help with the hospital whenever I can, but they will have to pull me and drag me because I say I want to be with the children. So I do program, art, music, a school garden. I can go there. And the idea is to teach them how to fish, teach agriculture, how to sell it in the neighborhood villages, and also how we can transform the foods. Let's say if you have pepper, how to do pepper sauce.
What is the Angels for Haiti project all about?
In 1993, I formed the Health Through Communications Foundation, which was a program. At the time, I wasn't going back to Haiti. And it was to do program for underserved population in San Diego. So I feel if you give a child a brush or a musical instrument, he or she will never touch a gun. That's simple. It's an opportunity to be part of the community. And then in 1999, when I decided it was time to start going back to Haiti, so I went to replicate what I did. So I took my energy from here in the community and do more community public health in Haiti. While here, I only did free medical care, like with Father Joe. That's why we call it the Angels for Haiti. So people raise money. We have scholarships for the school. So this is part of what the Angels for Haiti do. It's education, scholarship.
That's very good work that you do. What other good works have you done in the past?
In San Diego, let's see. What did you do? Some volunteer work. I work with the Urban Indian, San Diego Urban Indian Clinic, downtown. And for many years also, I work with the Kumeyaay Indians, the Borona, the Sequans. At the time, they didn't have much money as an OBGYN. And after that, they were very grateful and to give me money to start the art and the music program in Haiti. The Sequans, very good to me. As a gynecologist, I was one of the founder of the Rachel Center for the Homeless Clinic, started in 1986. Then I had started with the St. Vincent de Paul Village Clinic with Father Joe in 1997. So to this day, which is in April, is going to be 17 years. So I do volunteer work. Also, I do volunteer work in El Cajon for the past year and a half. There is a clinic called Volunteer in Medicine. So I've been doing free medical care for women who have no insurance. So those are the three things I do in San Diego. And I do things also in other countries, including Haiti, where I've been going back and forth and doing a lot for the children. We have medical care and art, music.
Very nice. And how did you find out that you were selected as one of the 22 brilliant, beautiful, and brave Black women at the San Diego Women's Museum?
I got an email and I said, are you telling me that I'm one of the chosen women? They said, yes, you are. And we are so honored to have you. I felt honored. Yes, that was my reaction, because there are so many wonderful women doing wonderful things around in San Diego. Beautiful Black women do a lot of beautiful things. And I was glad that I was chosen. Also, there are a lot of the other people that I know. We've worked together for many, many years. So it was like a sister reunion.
When did you find out that you were selected?
February 6th, it's about a month prior to that. And there were some things they wanted from us, like they wanted to know a favorite quote. And also, who inspired me as a woman? And also, whatever I wanted to say. And they wanted a little something. So I chose the quote from Saint Thérèse de Lisieux, and where it says, I am at the right place at the right time. You know, something to be in the moment. You believe you are where you're supposed to be. I have it next to my computer because my journey has been very long and there were many things that I've accomplished and I felt, oh, this is it. But I'm always continually growing. And also I had a picture of my grandmother. My grandmother raised me since I was 4. She was my father's mother. My grandmother didn't know how to write her name until she was 64 years old. And I taught her how to write her name letter by letter. And the day she signed her name on the passport, it was the most beautiful day in her life. And what I learned is that it's never too late to learn. She was 64 years old.
How do patients find out about you? How do you get your name out there?
I'm working with Matt. He read some of my writings and he said, you know what? You are a very powerful person, because he had a friend who was sick. And then I saw him and I said, this is what's wrong with you. And changed his life. And then that's how he ended up meeting me. And he said, when I went on the internet, I didn't see the powerful person who you are in person. I don't see it. So I've been working with him since July.
Is there anything else that you would like the readers to know about you?
I'm very happy. All the past issues that I've had, I was able to deal with them. So now I'm in a stage where I have accomplished many things in my life. I'm content with what I have. I am blessed that I'm sound of mind and I'm able to help a lot of people who are suffering.
This is Janice Mark with East County Magazine and People Power. I just interviewed Dr. Carole Ja Mira. And she has been selected as one of the 22 brilliant, beautiful, and brave Black women. And her profile is on display at the San Diego Women's Museum until March 28th. Thank you, Dr. Carole.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
Her hand and she holds yours, and that's a very good sign that he told us he will see in the good old summertime.
This is a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. As temperatures climb, it's important to stay cool. Seniors and those without air conditioning are particularly vulnerable to heat-related illness. The county has provided a list of cool zones where you can beat the heat, including places in East County, such as libraries and senior centers. All are free and open to the public during designated hours. You can find a list of school zones in your area at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
Over the past 30 years, the Latino population in the U.S. has risen by 243%. But during that same period, the number of Latino doctors has decreased by 22%. That's according to a UCLA study of census data. It says the shortage is acute in California, with only 50 Latino doctors for every 100,000 Latino patients. Study co-author Dr. Gloria Sanchez says communication is key to a strong doctor-patient relationship, and she notes it leads to better outcomes, especially with chronic diseases like obesity, diabetes, and heart disease.
If a doctor and a patient can't understand each other, I think that there can be very negative patient outcomes.
A 2009 analysis showed patients who don't speak English well report understanding only half of what doctors tell them. The UCLA study blames the Latino physician shortage partly on the dismantling of affirmative action programs in California and on a decrease in anti-poverty programs over the past few decades. Sanchez says that led to a big drop in the number of Latinos going to college and becoming doctors.
It really is a reflection of who gets into medical school, and it's typically not an ethnic minority. You have to be fairly affluent and or be in good educational systems to get a secondary degree like an MD.
Sanchez suggests that in order to produce more doctors from disadvantaged populations, the U.S. should invest more money in programs that start early, bringing science education, tutoring, self-esteem, and leadership programs to elementary schools in low-income neighborhoods. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is Ed Barreno with a Consumer Health Alert. Beech Nut Nutrition is recalling nearly 2,000 pounds of baby food products that may be contaminated with small pieces of glass, the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Food Safety and Inspection Service has announced. The recalled products are Stage 2 Beech Nut Classics, sweet potato and chicken in 4-ounce glass jars. The baby foods were produced on December 12, 2014 and expire December 2016. These products were shipped nationwide. Recalled items have the number P68A inside the USD inspection mark. The problem was discovered after Beech Nut received a complaint from a consumer who found a small piece of glass in the product. The company has also received a report of an oral injury linked to consumption of its baby food. The federal government has received no other reports of injury or illness from consumption of these products. Anyone concerned about an injury or illness should contact a healthcare provider. Consumers with questions about the recall can contact the Beech Nut Consumer Hotline at 866-674-4446.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show.
We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barreno, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.